Let's get going on another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. We're going to turn our attention back to 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse number 35, where King Jehoshaphat, who has recently been rebuked by God for helping out King Ahab of northern Israel, and Jehoshaphat had just barely escaped being killed because he was in a battle as an ally to King Ahab whenever King Ahab got killed at God's arrangement. King Jehoshaphat starts rearranging his kingdom and doing things the proper way. But he makes one more bad choice, or starts to make one more bad choice that God stops him from making. And that's mentioned here in verse 35 of 2 Chronicles 20. After this, Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, joined with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who acted wickedly. So Ahab's son, Ahaziah, is now on the throne in northern Israel, and he wants to be a participant in the alliance with southern Judah that his father had had. And one of the ways that he wants to help out with is trade on the high seas. So verse 36, he joined him in building ships to go to Tarshish, which the Tarshish that a lot of us know about seems to be over on the west coast of Spain. Now that's a long ways away from where these ships are being built. So there is a secondary Tarshish that some people point toward, which would be the subcontinent of Asia, of India area. And so that's more than likely the one we're talking about here. So they're building these ships at Ezion Geber. Now that's important because that port belongs to southern Judah. It's on the northern end of the Gulf of Aqaba arm of the Red Sea. When King Solomon had his empire going, he sent trade ships out from Ezion Geber to travel down the Gulf of Aqaba out of the Red Sea proper into the Indian Ocean. And they either went over to the subcontinent of India, maybe even as far as Malaysia, or they went down to the southeast coastline of Africa, down even by Madagascar. Or perhaps they went both places. And he brought back lots of trade goods from these three-year-long trips. Well, Jehoshaphat apparently wants to do that, and Ahaziah wants to join him in it and foots part of the bill of building the ships that are going to be used for this. So this is clearly Jehoshaphat agreeing to continue the alliance, not in warfare, but rather in trade fair. Well, God's not going to have that. Verse 37. Then Eleazar, the son of Dodavahu of Marashah, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, "Because you have joined with Ahaziah, he who is will destroy what you have made." So basically God says, no, because you've made this arrangement with a guy that I don't want you connected to, you don't get to keep the ships. You don't even get to go on these trips. And so the ships were wrecked and were not able to go to Tarshish. So we don't have any details as to how the ships were wrecked, whether there was a huge storm that came in or was it fire from heaven, you know, lightning storm that came in and set everything on fire. But the fact that a prophet came and told him ahead of time that you don't get to do this trade deal, you don't get to do this ship agreement, I'm going to destroy, I'm going to blow them up, I'm going to burn them up, or I'm going to blow them to pieces with a hurricane, whatever it was, when it happened, Jehoshaphat realized, oh my goodness, this is from God. I better not be doing this anymore. And he doesn't. So the next story involves the end of Ahaziah's life, the guy that we just heard about being involved in this trade deal. 2 Kings chapter 1, verse number 2. Now, Ahaziah fell through the lattice in his upper chamber in Samaria, and he lay sick. Now, the lattice work would be kind of equivalent to a sort of screening, protective cover for a window. And so somehow he either trips or leans against it wrong or something happens, and he falls at least one, maybe two stories down and breaks himself. And apparently it's not just simply broken bones. He must have some internal damage because he realizes he's really bad off. And so what does he do? He sent messengers telling them, go inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron. Now, the wording here has been changed over time by Israeli people to make fun of the original name of this particular idol. Baal, of course, we recognize that. That's the name of the thunder and lightning god of the Canaanites, and now of the northern Israel people as well. Zebul was the original wording here, almost certainly, and that meant the high flying god Baal, because he flew up in the sky. But the Israelis just changed one letter and turned it into the Lord of the buzzing flies. That is, the little flies that fly over the manure pile. And so they are kind of making a negative joke against him. So that's just like a side thing, because in the New Testament, this name gets used as an equivalent for Satan. And Jesus gets accused of being in league with Satan based on this name. But here in this text, Ahaziah breaks himself up by falling out that window, and he wants to reach out to a healing idol of Baal. And that idol is located at Ekron, which is a Philistine territory that is underneath the control of northern Israel. So he sends these messengers saying, you go and you inquire of this healing god, this high-flying god, whether I shall recover from this sickness. I need to know, am I going to get over this or not? Verse 3, but the angel of he who is said to Eliyahu the Tishbite. We haven't heard from Elijah for a while, have we? So the message comes to Elijah saying, arise, go up and meet the messengers of the king of Samaria. So go and intercept these guys before they get very far from the palace at Samaria. And you say this to them, is it because there's no God in Israel that you're going to inquire of Baal-zebub, the god of Ekron? So what are you doing? Why are you going out of town? There's a God here, and we've got prophets that work for this God. Now, therefore, thus says he who is, you shall not come down from the bed to which you've gone up, but you shall surely die. So the answer is, no, you're not going to get off this bed. And you don't need to know that from Baal. I'll tell it to you as the true God. So Elijah has a mission, and he does it. He intercepts the messengers, passes the prophecy of Ahaziah's impending death on. Verse 5, the messengers returned to the king. So they come back to the palace, and he said to them, why have you returned? See, it's a good day down to Ekron and a day back, so they shouldn't have been back for, you know, until the next day. Why have you returned? And they said to him, there came a man to meet us and said to us, go back to the king who sent you and say to him, thus says he who is, Yahweh, is it because there's no God in Israel that you're sending to inquire of Baal-Zebul, the god of Ekron? Therefore, you will not come down from the bed to which you've gone up, but you shall surely die. So we met a guy. We don't know him. See, it's been a while since Elijah has been moving around in some of these circles, the royal circles of northern Israel. So these guys don't recognize him. But they pass the message on. And so Ahaziah, who he knows who Elijah is, he would have been younger when his father had confrontations with him, but he probably would have been there at least for a couple of those. So he said to them, what kind of man was he who came to meet you and told you these things? So tell me what he looked like. And they answered him, he wore a garment of hair, that's probably camel hair or goat hair, with a belt of leather about his waist. So this is very inexpensive clothing. Very basic stuff. And as we've talked about before, Elijah seems to have been known for wearing this very basic sort of clothing. Elijah also might be a Nazirite, meaning he's taken a Nazirite vow where he doesn't cut his hair, the hair of his head, or the hair of his beard. And so he would have looked pretty wild and woolly. And so it is clear that Ahaziah suspected it might be this guy, and he knows that Elijah has a very unique look. So he says, what did he look like? And they told him, and he said, it's Elijah the Tishbite. And he's not a happy camper about this. So the king sent to him the captain of 50 men with his 50. So he sends a half centurion, basically, a guy that's got 50 soldiers. They know where Elijah's at. And so this arrest party goes out. He went up to Elijah, who was sitting on the top of a hill, probably very near Samaria. And he said to him, oh, man of God, the king says, come down here. So surrender yourself. Be arrested. And Elijah answered the captain of the 50, if I am a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50. And then fire came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. So Elijah speaks, and fire falls from the sky again. Remember, that's what happened with the contest with the prophets of Baal. The prophets of Baal went on for probably 6 or more hours, dancing and singing and cutting themselves, and they couldn't get Baal to do a thing. But then Elijah says just a few words to God, and fire falls, and there's nothing but a smoking hole in the ground. So yeah, he's definitely a man of God. He speaks God's word. And so he warned these guys, if I am a man of God, guess what? May God send his fire on you. And it happens. And by the way, this is related, I think, in my personal opinion, with some of the story in the book of Revelation about the two witnesses. I happen to think those witnesses are Elijah and Enoch, the only two men that never died in their own stories. I think that they were transported through time forward, where they will die in the story of the two witnesses. But anyway, when you go to the book of Revelation, guess what? One of the things about them is they can call down fire from heaven on anyone that tries to do them harm. And so here we have the example of that happening. Verse 11. Again, you know, after a period of time has happened, the king sends out a second arrest party. He doesn't know what happened to the other one. Or maybe some civilians came back and told him. Again, the king sent to him another captain of 50 men with his 50, and he answered and said to him, O man of God, this is the king's order. You come down quickly. You come down right now. But Eliyahu answered them, if I am a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50. And once again, fire of God came down from heaven and consumed him and his 50. So now you've got two smoking holes in the ground right there at the base of the hill. There might be bits and pieces of armor. I don't know. There might be charred bodies. But these guys, 100 of them, tried to take God's man by force. And God wasn't having any of that. Verse 13. Again, the king sent the captain of a third 50 with his 50. And the third captain of 50 went up, and he came, and he fell on his knees before Elijah, and he entreated him. Oh, man of God, please let my life and the life of these 50 servants of yours be precious in your sight. Behold, fire came down from heaven and consumed the two former captains of 50 men with their 50s, but now let my life be precious in your sight. So this guy learned from the mistakes of the past. Now, it's possible that he had some sort of basic faith in the true and living God already. Because remember, we've had a lot of prophets of God that have been working recently in northern Israel. And so he may have the beginnings of his own faith, and he didn't want to tangle with the big prophet of God, especially after what happened to his two previous compatriots. And God honors that. Verse 15, then the angel of he who is said to Elijah, go down with him, do not be afraid of him. Now that might give you an indication as to why these first two groups were taken out. Is because they would have done rough things to Elijah if they'd been given half the chance. This guy, this commander of 50, is not going to let that stuff happen. He will escort Elijah intact, unharmed, back to the king. So, he arose, and he went down with him to the king. And then he said to him, this is Elijah passing on God's word directly to the king. Thus says he who is, because you have sent messengers to inquire of Baal-Zebul, the god of Ekron, is it because there's no God in Israel to inquire of his word? So, are you kidding me? Don't you understand how God is here with you guys right now? He's got his presence with you, and you're going elsewhere? Therefore, you shall not come down from the bed to which you've gone up, but you shall surely die. So he'd already heard this message from his messengers. Now he hears it in person. And then he dies. We're not told how much longer. It doesn't appear to be terribly longer. Remember, he got injured falling from upper story window. And so he's probably got internal bleeding, and eventually it kills him. So he died according to the word of he who is that Eliyahu had spoken. And then Jehoram became king in his place. So in the second year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, because Ahaziah had no son. So now we find out that Jehoram is a younger son of King Ahab. His big brother dies, so he becomes the next king. But weirdly enough, he has the same name, in a couple of different forms, by the way, as the crown prince that is now co-ruling with Jehoshaphat down in southern Judah, the guy named Jehoram, son of Jehoshaphat. So we've got two Jehorams on two separate thrones for a bit. And they're related to each other by marriage, because Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, is married to Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, and therefore the sister of Jehoram, the son of Ahab and Jezebel. So we're keeping it all in the family here, kind of. Now, the rest of the acts of Ahaziah that he did, are they not written in the books of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? I want you to turn just briefly to chapter 3 of 2 Kings, where we read this. In the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, Jehoram, the son of Ahab, became king over Israel in Samaria, and he reigned 12 years. So we just read about that, but now we have it tied in, not to Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, but Jehoram Jehoshaphat himself. So this is where we understand that Jehoshaphat is allowing Jehoram, his son, to kind of co-reign with him, co-lead with him. But this guy up in the north, at Samaria, we get this report about his character. He did what was evil in the sight of he who is, though not like his father and mother, so not like Ahab and Jezebel. For he put away the pillar of Baal that his father had made. Interesting. So, the new king of northern Israel decides not to be a worshiper of Baal, the thunder and lightning god, that his mom and his dad had worshipped. In fact, he doesn't even allow that worship to continue. He does away with the public worship item, the big pillar of Baal there at the capital city. But that doesn't make him a good guy entirely. He's still got issues. And we'll see this wrestling back and forth in him during some stories that are coming up about northern Israel later. But here's his remaining problem. Verse 3, nevertheless, he clung to the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. He did not depart from it. Now, what is that sin? Well, the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, was that he made two golden calves, put one at Dan, one at Bethel, and he declared, "This is the God who brought you out of Egypt, Israel. Worship him in these places. Don't go to Jerusalem. Don't cross that line down into the country of southern Judah. You worship up here these golden calves as a representation of the God who got us out of Egypt many generations ago. So that's a false faith. It's a twisted faith that kind of went out of favor, at least for a while, when Ahab and Jezebel were trying to wipe out anything that was directed toward He who is. But now that Jehoram of northern Israel has sidelined Baal worship, he brings the people back to golden calf worship instead. And that's going to be a problem. At this point, we are going to set the stage for our next story by going to 2 Kings. So we're going to kind of scroll back up again. Chapter 2, verse number 1. We had just been talking about Elijah coming back into our story. Well, now Elijah is going to leave our story. Chapter 2, 2 Kings says, "Now when He who is was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind." So the person writing this down already knows the whole story. The people reading it already know the whole story. So he leads with that. He says, when God was getting ready to do that big deal of pulling Elijah away by that whirlwind and by that fiery chariot, Elijah and his protege, Elisha, were on their way from Gilgal. Now, this is not Gilgal down in the valley. This is Gilgal up in the hill country. It's one of the places where they had sons of the prophets at. And so we are going to now start a journey of farewell for the prophet Elijah. Mark your place. We'll get back there next time we're into the Word.